Hey guys, thanks for joining us again for another Vintage Vibes podcast episode. I'm your host, Eric. And today we have Danny with us. Danny, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Let us know about
where you're from, what kind of car you drive, that sort of thing.
Sure. Howdy, howdy. My name is Danny. I live in Burbank, California. And current daily driver is a 65 Mustang. It's a silver blue car, which is pretty unique around here. So that's what I'm driving. I also have a Project 72 Gran Torino that's on jack stands as every project car. And then just like a little Jeep running around town.
Your daily, you drive that almost every single day?
I do. I say daily, but I don't really have a commute, so I kind of like use it when I have to do something, like run errands or anything like that. So it's by far the most reliable.
More reliable than a Jeep you use to drive around town?
Oh my God, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. So funny story about that. I previously had a 79 Bronco that was a really cool little rig that I ended up selling, and I bought a 2001 Jeep Cherokee, which is a, you know, XJ, pretty iconic. People love them because they're apparently so reliable. But I was leaving town on a work trip, and on my way to the airport, it just like completely stalled out, shut off. I was like stuck on the side of the highway. So I had to wait for a tow truck. It was a kind of an ordeal. Oh, and I ended up just taking the Mustang to the airport. And I just parked it. And a week later, came back, drove
That's
home.
Funny.
No issues. Oh.
Living in Burbank, I've never asked this question before, but like, I know in the back of my mind it's always like a worry, but like, do you ever get worried about like your car, like someone breaking into like your old car and like taking it? Because realistically they're pretty easy to steal, like.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Burbank is a pretty safe area, like this, as far as LA goes. I feel more safe leaving it like street parked in Burbank than I do in a lot of other neighborhoods. But like, there's a few things that I, like, when I was building the car, I knew I wanted to do, like putting like a electric kill switch and like throw an air tag in it, you know, kind of basic safety items, so that if I ever did have to park it overnight, I just, you know, do that. And then I have a car cover too.
So when you park it at the airport,
I try to hide it.
That's funny.
Yeah, I parked at the airport, I covered it, and I just like left enough the license plate to peek out just to make sure I don't get like a ticket or anything.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was good though.
So like, what does the Mustang have? Was it like you bought it running, or was it a project and then you got it running, or what was the story with the Mustang?
So I'll give you some background, just because I've never like always been into classic cars, and I grew up in Florida where it's like a lot of high horsepower, like late model Mustangs and Camaros and that kind of thing. So when I first started getting into cars, my sister had a V6 Mustang, like an 07 or something like that, and I ended up inheriting that, and that's how I kind of like got into Mustangs. But then in college, I ended up trading that for a 2013 GT, which is, you know, a pretty fun little college car, you know, Coyote, 400 horsepower, whatever.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I got into some trouble with that, but it was a fun car. It was fun. Definitely a lot more power than I should have had. But after college, I ended up coming home. I lived in Tampa at the time, Tampa, Florida. And my mom actually found the Mustang that I drive now, like down the street from her where she gets her dogs groomed. There's like a used car lot next door. And it was just sitting out there. It was sitting for, I think, like a year. The history on the car, I think it's an Indiana car originally, and ended up going through like a Copart auction and ended up in Miami. And that's where like this guy that I bought it from ended up getting it. He got it from the Copart auction, and he just like left it in disarray. He was a mechanic, but you know, classic mechanics, they buy their own cars and they just like never work on them. So he just like left it out. He like gas tank was like totally open to the elements. There was a few like hurricanes that came through and the motor just like got completely rusted out. So like, I did technically buy it with a motor and transmission, but they were just like so far gone. I just decided to start over.
Nice.
And that's, you know, kind of where it started.
You do most of your work then? Like, you don't really hire out the work and you do everything yourself? Or what would you say?
Yeah, pretty much. I, you know, a couple times I've tried to find a good mechanic, and like, I'm a recent kind of, you know, transplant to Burbank. I've only lived here for 2 years, so I try to find a good mechanic, because like, anytime my cars fail on me, like the Jeep, for instance, it just happens at such an inconvenient time that I'm like, I don't really have the time to deal with this. I just want to like offload it. But I just haven't found a good mechanic yet. So I do everything myself. Machine work. I mean, I don't do machine work, but I have buddies who do that. Give me a good little discount, you know?
That's pretty cool.
Mostly so, it's myself.
Okay. So see, so you had a couple cool cars. Like, did you get the V6 Mustang in high school, you said? Or was it beginning of college? Yeah. Yeah. So like, did you always like cars?
Yeah,
or was
yeah,
it like
correct.
Once you got the Mustang in high school, you were like, oh, you know what? Cars are pretty cool. Like, I'm going to get into them.
Yeah, that was kind of it. Like, I never had the huge car influence in my life that a lot of people have. Like, you know how usually people who are like really into cars, they like their dad is mm-hmm. into it or their uncle, and that's kind of like how they start wrenching on it.
Yeah.
I didn't really have that. I was kind of like the only mm-hmm. car guy in the family, and like none of my friends were like as deep into it. But you know, I've always been into cars. I never really got as deep into it as when I got my first Mustang. That's kind of like when I started doing like oil changes and like brake changes. Yeah.
Started watching all the YouTube videos,
like,
and
fell down just... from there. Chris Fix, man, yeah. Like laying underneath the car, like it's pondering like, existentially, like watching Chris Fix.
Yeah, this does not match the video.
Oh my god, how am I gonna get this done? Yeah, right. Like the hard mistakes of like starting an engine swap on a Sunday night when you got work the next day.
Engine swaps in a driveway with like little tools is like because you're broke and you just gotta figure it out. It just sucks. It just sucks.
Yeah, man. Dude, yeah. I remember my mom was pissed at me because I like the first time I ever did an oil change, I went to Harbor Freight and I like bought like, you know, like the $200 like jacks, the jack stands, all that. Like, why'd you spend all this money? I was like, I promise I'm gonna use it. Nice. And I still have it with me today.
That's the thing about working on cars though, like the tools do add up. So like sometimes it's like, man, like the tool will cost me $300. Paint a mechanic will cost me $250. Like, but then I might use the tool again. I might use the tool.
Exactly. Gymnastics for tool buying are incredible, man. That's how I got into like the Milwaukee. Like, well, I'm probably gonna use it 3 or 4 times.
It's not as bad as
pays for itself.
Some of these people I meet with like tons of Snap-on stuff.
Definitely.
I'm like, dude, that's like it's like half a house in your freaking toolbox. Yeah,
that's a down payment, man. You know what? I'm still a big Ryobi, like I don't want to call him like a nut hugger, but like I'm a big Ryobi fan. Like you can get Ryobi fit like tools so cheap, and for like Shade Tree guys, it's just so affordable. It's like even their like their brushless line of tools now, it's amazing. Like I have their Impact and it's amazing. It's like 600 pound feet of torque or whatever.
Yeah.
So
no,
they're pretty decent.
Yeah,
tools really. Money.
Then I have the Harbor Freight Impact. That thing's been great. That big old, it's the it's the big old hat.
We know the Harbor Freight.
It's fun for like lug nuts. That thing's freaking, I've had it for like 4 years now. It's freaking good.
I love a good Impact, man. That was the tool I was most excited about. Like, you know, you're like a real car guy when you buy your first Impact wrench. I had like a little quarter inch Impact from Ryobi, and I thought I was like the hottest shit on the block. Like trying to knock off wheels, and this thing is just like clacking away,
that's
like
funny.
Not being able to
I know,
do it.
I know the feeling. I remember the first time. I think my brother and I split the first Impact we bought. We're like, oh, like we'll pay 50-50. And it was like this cheap AutoZone one. That was like too. So weak.
Duralast like Impact timeshare.
Yeah, it was an Impact timeshare.
That's great.
That's funny. Yeah, I think my brother still has it. Yeah, no, but tools do add up though. But
can't beat it. Yeah, but you save so much money. Like every time I think about a project car and how much people spend on it, if you do the work yourself, you're just like having the cost right there. Like all you have to do is like buy parts.
Yeah,
you know, sucks up your time, but you know, whatever, it's fun.
Yeah, it's like half the price and quadruple.
Yeah,
the time.
Exactly. Especially the first time you do it.
Yeah, after the first time, though,
tutorials
and everything.
Dude, first time.
I remember the first time I did
the right side.
Yeah, no, it's like the joke of like you do your driver's side suspension, it takes you like half a day, and then passenger side takes like 10 minutes because you just do
it
one time.
Like, the first time it always takes forever. Yeah. It seems so hard. I feel like a lot of tasks, like they seem so daunting. Like it's like, oh man, this is so hard. And then you do it, and then it's like, wow, that was freaking easy. I shouldn't have even looked up the video. I could have figured it out myself. But... yeah, but a lot of stuff does get really easy once you do it. You're like, wow, this is not that bad. And then...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I encourage people to do it, man. Yeah. If you have any sort of troubleshooting like at all, you can do a project car.
And some patience, I guess.
At the end of the day, a car is just nuts and bolts. You just got to remember what order to put them in. But
I know, I blew up. So in college, I had a car that I blew up. And like, I looked up like how to do it, all this stuff. And everyone's like, oh, you got to get Ziploc bags. You got to like label everything, what's what. I tried. Ah, man, I was still missing stuff in the end. I was like, well, not missing. I had extra stuff in the end. And I was like, well, the car turned on. Everything works. Worse. I mean, I got a couple extra bolts.
Yeah, you're always left with a couple extra nuts.
I have a friend, every time he does something to his car, he has extra stuff. I'm like, where is this coming from, dude? Your car is just going to fall apart.
Slowly losing every nut and bolt to his car.
Yeah.
And like in a month, he's like, I have this weird electrical problem. I don't know what it is.
I always feel bad about touching. Well, like, so there's like two sides of it. Yeah. There's like when you start messing with a car that's never been messed with, and then you could tell like nothing has ever been messed with. And then there's the cars where stuff has just been fucked up. Like stuff is like, it's like, who put this back together? Like my wife has the 68 Mustang and I could tell that car has been messed with. Like some stuff is just like, I'm like, dude, who thought of this? Who did like, this is some rinky dink fixes. But
the roadside repairs, man, like the butt connectors and like the T-tap splices and everything like that.
And then this, there's like this piece of cloth pulled, like, I don't know. There's some weird cloth washer things in there. And I was like, okay, I doubt this is original. Like, this is like some weird, like, I don't, they found something in the trunk and like are using it as a washer, but it was freaking weird.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, I get it, because, like, sometimes you just kind of, like, hack something together, and you're like, oh, I'm going to fix this, like, next week. And then, like, next week comes, and you're just like, oh, I'll do it next week. No, and you keep kind of, like, kicking the can down the road.
I hate doing it.
I kind of get it, yeah. That's what's fun about old cars, though, is because you can, like, fix something, and it feels like a brand new car. Like, so, in my Mustang, for the longest time, I rewired it with one of those American Auto Wire kits, and I just, like, left the trunk wires kind of, like, stranded around, like I didn't cut them or anything like that, and I finally like trimmed them down, like did like a really nice like insulate like wire loom, taped it all together, and it's like professional now, and it looks so much better. Like I have like actual usable trunk now. Nice. I love it.
My wife Carolina, her Mustang, we're having like overheating issues and all this stuff, so I got the electric fan and like a smaller aluminum radiator, and like my biggest goal with it was like, got to make sure the wires are nice and neat, make it look as original as possible. Like, I do not want a wires nest in here.
I feel that. Buying used cars, that you definitely get that. And it's frustrating because, like, that's how, like, my quote-unquote reliable daily drivers have been, where it's like, you buy, you know, a 10-year-old car, but 10 owners all hacking up, like, putting a system in or something. You just find, like, bare wires and like loose ground and everything like that. Yeah, and it's just,
I
like,
know, that's why
gotta go in and
like
fix
the
it.
Less amount of owners the better. I feel like it's always like buying off the original owner is always nice. It's a nice feeling.
Yeah
that's true.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know.
With like our old cards, it's like hard to do that, right?
That's like impossible. Like,
still recommend it though if anyone's on the fence about in classic car. I'll always push them. I'm like, my friend from high school who's like not really into classic cars, he just bought like a 63 like Newport, and I was so hyped for him. I was like, oh my God, this thing is awesome, like total mob spec, like blacked out. I mean, it's just the coolest thing. And I love when like people my age get into classic cars, because like where I'm from, people don't really have classic cars like that. Like it's usually just like the old guys at the Cars and Coffee, and then it's like all the late models, like Honda and everything like that.
I think we're all around the same age. If you're born in 97, based off your email, then we're all around the same age.
Yep. Good guess. Yeah. That's what I love about California. There's like so many people here that like any car scene you want to get into, there's people your age that are into them. And like, you just don't find that anywhere else. It's like, it's so cool. And you have like old like speed shops that have been running since like the 50s and 60s that are still open. Yeah. That you can go like drive to and pick up like parts and stuff. You have like old mechanics that are still running their shops. that were like working with Carroll Shelby back in the day. Like, yeah. It's just like, yeah, the neatest thing. I love it. It's so cool.
The car scene. I saw this thing though. I don't know if you guys saw it, but like, there's like an article saying something about like they're trying to ban classic cars or something in California, or like limit the use of them. Yeah, but I like looked into it, and I guess it's like it only applies. I think if your car is like below 78, you're like, it's still exempt from whatever they're trying to do. So we should be good.
Oh, interesting. I hope so. Like, the only thing, okay, so I saw the surveys that they had sent out, and like people had said like, oh, like, yeah, I got one of those surveys in the mail or whatever, but I haven't heard like officially, like besides like that Yahoo.com article or whatever, them saying like, coming out and saying like, oh, we're gonna plan to do this or something like that. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I hope they won't, but who knows? It's just like such a big part of California car culture, you know? It's like all these old cars, how can you say that they can't be driving around? I don't know. I don't see it happening, but I hope.
So you mentioned earlier that you had a 79 Bronco. So was that here in California, or was that in?
Yes. It was briefly. So I, before I lived in California, I lived in Denver, and my winter like runaround vehicle was that Bronco, but it was just like, that Bronco was in really bad shape. It was used on a ramp, ranch in Wyoming, I think it was. I think that's the story. It was either Wyoming or like Steamboat Springs, like northern Colorado. And it was just rusted out. Like, every body panel was like kind of rotted out a little bit. I had a few like, so I had a windshield on that Bronco that broke, and it was pretty tough finding someone just to be willing to like swap a window in, because it had rolled over sometime in the past and they had like welded a new roof in. But because of that, it was like a tight fit to fit the windshield in. Like, I remember my windshield guy, he came, he saw it, he tried putting in a windshield and actually cracked because it was such a tight fit. So like, that frustrated me a lot. Like, I already had the Mustang, so I was kind of like, oh, I really don't want another project that I like can't daily drive. So I moved to California, and like soon after that, I sold that Bronco. And part of the reason was emissions. Like, I was kind of scared. Like, it was a Colorado truck. It didn't have anything like original to it as far as emissions goes. It didn't have like the smog pump or anything like that. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to go find like a 50-year-old smog pump and like throw it on, you know? So I just got rid of it, bought the Jeep. That was easy. And then I bought the Gran Torino, and that's how...
Do you regret selling the Bronco, or just now? Like, I never cared for it?
I kind of always regret selling cars. Like, I get pretty emotionally attached to my cars. So that's kind of my downfall. Like, I if I sell a car, I'm going to regret it for a while. So I did regret selling the Bronco for a little bit, just because it was such a cool vehicle. Like, I got compliments on it everywhere, but it needed a lot of work, so... I just wasn't willing to put that in. And like, I didn't have the space for it. It was a huge truck. The Bronco is like as wide as F-150s. Yeah. It didn't have a lift on it, but it did have like 33-inch tall tires on it. So it was pretty tall. It was pretty gnarly vehicle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at that point I was kind of like, I'll cut my losses and just buy another project and get some of the daily around.
So what engine and like transmission do you have in the Mustang? You said earlier that you had to swap it out because the original stuff was all beat up. So like, what are you running?
Yeah. So I have a Blueprint Motors motor. For those that don't know, Blueprint Motors, they're based out of like Nebraska, but they're mail order crate motors that you can just like straight up buy online, have it shipped to your door. That's what I ended up doing, just because that ended up being like the same cost as rebuilding my motor. I was just like, I'll just get a new one. You know, they have a pretty unbeatable like 5-year warranty or something like that. So I did that. It's a 302 roller block. It's, board 40 over, I believe it is. So it's really like a 306 or something like that. But 350 horse, 375 torque, pretty good for a street car. Like, it could still put 87 gas in it, pretty conservative timing, so it's pretty good. And then behind that, I have a T5 transmission for Modern Driveline, which is like their bolt-in like 5-speed conversion kit for early Mustangs. It's a hydraulic clutch, a world-class T5, handles like 300 torque, something like that. So the motor makes more torque than that, but I'm gonna be cruising around. I'm not gonna be drag racing it. So
do you still have a carburetor? Totally fine
what I do.
Yeah. Dang, that's why it's so.
Yep. Yeah, I have a carburetor on the Mustang, And then I had EFI, like one of those Holley sniper units on my Bronco. And the sniper is pretty cool, but I just had so many horror stories, like from people who own snipers who were kind of like, I couldn't service it, and I was stranded on the side of the road at like 2 a.m. So I was like, I'll just get a carburetor and call it a day. So no, that's what I ended up doing.
I really want to get a sniper for Carolina's Mustang. Because like, I've seen good reviews based on the specific sniper for the inline six. Like there's like a really good like kit, but I don't know. It's kind of expensive. It's all.
I remember the Bronco specifically, it had like, I think the issue with the snipers, they had two versions of it. It was like the regular sniper and then the stealth sniper. And I think with the stealth sniper, they like remounted the ECU so it wasn't like direct contact with heat or something like that, so it wouldn't like burn out. But I had heard a few stories specifically with like the four barrel ones that were like, yeah, it's just kind of like the injector stopped firing or it wouldn't turn on or something like that. So yeah. I don't know, electronics, yeah. Old cars.
So the Gran Torino, like, did you just recently get that, or you've had it for a bit, or?
I've had it since, I want to say, like, March-ish. That was a pretty interesting story, too. So on Facebook, I follow a guy called Snyder's Junkyard, and he's based out of Pueblo, Colorado, which is kind of south of Colorado Springs. And he has a like humongous junkyard of just like some really wonky and like weird cars. Like he has like Edsel wagons and like Corvairs and stuff like that. And yeah, I always followed him. And one day he posted this Gran Torino that was like my favorite color ever. It's like light blue with the laser stripe, the yellow laser stripe going across it. He was like, hey, this thing has sat here for a while. I kind of just want it gone, you know, $1,000, come get it. And I offered it $500 in a case of beer and took it. So that's how I ended up with it. And that one was in rough, rough shape. Like the front of the car was gone. There's no grill, no valance or anything like that. The right side of the car was also gone. Like the fender and like the wheel well of the fender was just like torn down. It didn't have any wheels on it. As far as I know, the research that I found in the car tells me that it's been sitting in that spot since 1975. So it has been sitting out there for a long time. And I didn't see the car at all. I just offered him $500 and he took it. And I was like, shit, I didn't think that would happen.
I have to figure out how to get this.
Exactly. I like figured it out. I found someone to ship it, which was like such a huge stress on my mind because you could bolt wheels on the back since it still had the axle on it. But the front wheels, it didn't have the spindles on it. So you couldn't mount anything to it. So my plan originally was like, okay, I have to fly to Colorado Springs, rent a Penske truck, drive down to Pueblo, swap out the spindle, mount wheels and tires on it, and then drive back to California with it. I don't know how I would have done that, honest to God, but I found someone to ship it. Thank God he had a forklift. He just like loaded it on. He got to my house. And, you know, he was here for a while because I'd built like a body dolly to get it off the trailer into my garage. And I started getting calls from like his boss, like pissed off, like, hey, this fucking car needs to get off my trailer. Like, you're wasting my time. I'm like, I'm trying to get this thing off, man. Believe me. I finally got it off and into my garage. And now I'm like in the process of like completely like stripping it down. I'm about to tear the frame off the body just to coat it and put some new body mounts and like kind of slap it back together. But sitting in Pueblo since 75, you would think it would be pretty rusty. But Pueblo is like high country Colorado, so it's very dry and it's kind of deserty. So the car has like no rust whatsoever. The only rust is on the rear wheels, like where the trim molding is. That's where like water settles or snow or whatever, and it packs in and it just like rots it out. But I pulled the carpet. The floors are like brand new. Like the paint on it is phenomenal. It's blows my mind. But yeah, it's in great shape. The wiring is in better shape than my 2001 Jeep, believe it or not. Like, it blows my mind how like Chrysler like fit these Jeeps with like such bad wiring that it's just like shredding apart. But like Torino has some pretty decent bones to it. I bought a roller 351 Windsor for it, and I have an AOD out of like a Fox body, I think it is. So I'm gonna put those two together and like have it as a fun street car. And just like a nice cruiser, that's the plan with it. It's just to kind of put a pretty bulletproof drivetrain in it. And
so was that like a Torino, like a dream car for you or anything like that? Or was it just like a random fucking moment that just happened to work out?
It was definitely impulsive for sure. I definitely saw it and I didn't even ask my girlfriend. I was like, oh shit, I'm just going to buy it and like figure it out, which is not the right call. You should have talked, always talk to your girlfriend or wife first. That's the lesson. But yeah, I actually shopped for a Torino, specifically a 1972 Grand Torino before I bought my Mustang, because I was like kind of starting to get into classic cars and I really liked Mustangs, but at the same time, I kind of knew like, oh, like if you go to any classic car show, you're bound to see a Mustang. Whereas like I've seen two, I think, 72 Grand Torino Sports, specifically like the fastback roofline, which is what I have. Like you never see those things. They built a lot of them. They built like 300,000 or something like that for 72, but none of them survived. No one really like restores them. To like buy parts for this thing, I had to find like a 90-year-old dude out in like Riverside who has like a huge stash of parts, and I just like grab everything from him. I bundle like, oh, like I'll give you a thousand for like the hood, this. I'll be like, all right, yeah, and I'll like chuck it in the Jeep and like go back home. So you can't like go to CJ Cody parts and like buy a brand new hood for this thing, you know?
Yeah. That's what's cool about the Mustang though. Like it's a bit every tougher single than part that. Is like reproduced. It's like crazy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's incredible. If you want to start with a classic car project, Mustang is definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
Or a Camaro or like anything like popular like that. Cause you can buy like, I was like shocked. Cause again, I didn't ever restore classic cars. So it was all new to me. And when I found out you could buy like the smallest like little clips or like hold down pins or anything like that brand new, I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like you're telling me I can buy like the little clip that holds like the wire on the heater box together? Like
that's the thing that sucks though, is like shipping costs like five of those little clips. You know, it's like $2 part, $10 shipping. It's like
well, that's why you gotta bundle it, man. You gotta spend like $300 at one time. Get that shipping.
Yeah.
You gotta like buy the 5 cent little clip and then like justify spending another $300 to save $10 on shipping.
Yeah, no, it's freaking
That's the way you go.
Especially like I feel like Chevys though have way more like support compared to like Fords.
Yeah, I was talking to someone about that. Like so Mustangs are pretty popular, yeah. But if you go to any show, you see a lot of specifically, I think, square bodies and like old Chevy trucks and like that kind of thing. I think in the order it goes, I think Chevys are definitely the most restored vehicles on the road.
Yeah, no,
I mean, their support is just incredible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Ford, obviously, and then Mopar. But Mopar stuff is like unobtainium. You want to like buy Mopar, it's like 30 grand for like a rotted out like Challenger shell or something like that. Like, I bought my shell for like $500. I'm like, all right, at least I'm not like out here spending like my life savings on a rotted out shell, you know? Like, I'm delusional, but I'm not that.
Yeah, no, our last guest, he had Challenger or Charger or whatever it is. And yeah, we talked to him about how like just Mopar stuff is like so overpriced. Like, it's like insane.
Oh my God, yeah. It blows my mind. I feel bad too, because like those cars rot out so easily too. So, like, you have to do like full floors and everything like that. It's going to cost you a pretty penny, but they're so cool. I love those. I love Roadrunners. I want a Roadrunner. I really do. I'm starting to get more into like the bigger size cars now. Now that I found the Mustang, I'm like, all right, let's like do like an actual muscle car, like a Fairlane or something.
Yeah. That's actually one of our questions. Like, so do you have any cars that like you want to eventually get? Like, is there anything else on your list that like I feel like a lot of car guys.
Oh man. I don't know. It's dangerous.
Too many to
list. I mean, I always go back and forth on like my dream car, and by that I mean like $100,000 car. And I think I want a Pantera one day when I can afford one, because Italian looks, Ford motors, like beautiful combo, you know, small block. I also saw like recently, you know, you always see Cobras with, you know, the side pipes and the huge flares and all that. I saw a Superformance like slab side Cobra, which is like the 289, you know, narrow body Cobra at a show one time. And I was like, this is a gorgeous car. Like, you're so used to seeing them with the side pipes and all that, that when you see like a street version, like narrow body, you know, tailpipes coming out the back, no stripes. I'm like such a huge fan of Cobras without stripes. It's unbelievable. It looks so good. I'm like, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. We'll see.
just the stripes.
Yeah, I think it's because like you get so used to seeing them that you like it kind of throws you off when you see one painted all one color. So yeah, maybe that.
I think the Cobra is like my dream car too.
They're just so cool, man.
They're just so nice.
Nothing like it. You could also like, I was talking to my buddy about it. Instead of buying like a $25,000 super performance shell or something like that, people also like modify like MGs and stuff like that to put Ford V8s in them. So you could go that route too. Or like a Honda S600 or something
there's
like that.
There's
like
the Datsun
small
ones
roadster.
That are really cool. Those Datsun cool. roadsters. Like, yeah, those.
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of those rolling around here and they're really cool cars. Actually, I helped find a stolen one because I follow someone. I think his name is like Datsun Reviver or something like that. And he posted on his story like, hey, someone stole my car. If you've seen it around, let me know. And like literally like a few hours before he posted that, I was with my girlfriend like driving through K-Town and I saw it and I didn't know it was his. I was like, oh, that's like a cool car. Like it's just parked on the side of the road. I wonder what it's doing here because it's, you know, kind of a rough area.
Oh,
and he posted that and I was like, hey, like this is the route I took. Like go run down there, see if it's still there. And it ended up being his car.
So they, I was like, my good so they found it and that was his month right there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand like what exactly happened. I think, I don't know, maybe he left his keys in it or something, but I remember seeing that specific car at like one of the Cars and Coffees around here. And I like followed him and like kind of kept up with it. And like just by chance, I just ended up like seeing his story at the right time. And I was like, oh no, like I'm pretty sure this is it. Cause like how many of those are running around, you know, like there's not many of those.
That
was a crazy time.
Your whole comment about leaving the keys in the car is funny because the other day I could not find my truck keys. I was like, where the hell are my truck keys? I left them in the ignition. I was like,
oh my God. I do that all the time. It's so bad. I don't know what it is. I never did that with my newer cars, but like the Mustang, I always leave the keys in the ignition. I always have to like double check, like do like the 3-pat like wallet phone keys. I've done it so many times and like I'll like go grab something inside or something, like come out and be like, oh shit, like someone totally could have just run off with this thing.
I think the thing is that the old car still beeps. You know, like the new car, so you leave your key in it and you open the door, it starts beeping. So I think that's what it is. I don't know.
Yeah,
I left my freaking keys in the truck for like a couple days. I was like, man, no one. And then my truck, okay, I don't know if I should say this publicly on the podcast, but my door is still locked on my truck. So like the doors were unlocked, key in the ignition. Yeah,
maybe someone thought it was
like
bait.
One of those TikTok videos where like they have something wired up. Yeah. Like your name or something. No.
Yeah. Right. There was a now that you mentioned it, I just remembered this. There was like a couple weeks ago. Do you know what the Porsche 959 is? Like that homologated like Porsche, kind of like rally racer type deal. There was one in like California. It's like a $1 million car. There was one like down the street from me, from where I live, and someone had posted it like, oh, there's a 959 just like street parked and the keys are like on the seat. There's no one around. Like what's going on? I don't think anyone ever found out what was going on with that, but like that was definitely one of those moments where I was like, yeah, I can see myself doing it.
Doesn't matter.
I get it. Maybe someone was baiting it out. I don't know, but yeah. Right.
Hella bait.
That's funny. Cause when I first bought my truck, my mother-in-law was like, oh, you need to fix those door locks like, as soon as possible. You need to get the whole steering wheel locked. Like, someone's going to steal that truck. And I was like, dude, that truck is so hard to start. If someone's trying to start that truck, like, good luck. Good luck. But it's like a whole 15.
Yeah, right. You have to do, like, the 15-step, like, slap the dash, like, jiggle the steering wheel.
Yeah.
No one's going to figure that out.
So that's why I was like, whatever. But... Yeah,
I figured. Yeah, manual transmission helps too. Yeah, if someone sees a stick in the car, they probably won't know what to do with it.
That thing, turning that thing. Yeah. By the time someone gets out of my driveway,
that's true.
It'll take. So it's a 30-minute ordeal. Yeah.
That's hilarious. So I wanted to ask. I was wondering. So how'd you learn all this stuff to do? You're doing like, you know, full engine. It sounds like you're kind of just building these cars.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm building it myself, man. In the garage built.
Did you just learn? Yeah, one at a time.
I mean, again, so it? I started with later model cars. So I just started out doing like the Chris Fix, like oil changes, the brake pads, that kind of thing. And then you kind of like eventually like graduate into more projects. Like my first modification was putting fog lights on my car. So you got to learn how to do like wiring a little bit. And of course, like anytime you do it for the first time, it's like super janky, like barely works. You might like mess around like a few times, like have to repair it. But the next time you do it on the next car, it's like professional level job. And that's like what I'm doing right now. Like there's definitely always something where like you work on a project car and then the next time you do it, it's just like, you know how to do it. You do it more professionally. Like you start to learn like little tools and tricks of the trade. Like if you want to pass a wire through like a firewall, you get a bulkhead connector instead of just like jamming it through and like messing up the insulation and all that stuff, you know. Like little things like that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. That is
Project cars are the way to go, man. That's how you learn the quickest too. You just get a cheap car, start messing around with it. Not your daily driver.
Is there any new modern cars that you want to have?
I would love a new modern car if I could afford it. No, it blows my mind. Seeing, I really wanted like a Civic Si because I have a buddy with one and he really likes it, but I just can't like stomach like $400-$600 a month, and like the new average car payment was still like $1,000 a month or something like that. So, I'm fine with my old cars for now. I really like my Mustang. If I could get like a new S550, I would do that too. Something like that would be pretty fun. I definitely like having like the newer peace of mind of like, this is totally stock. Like no one's messed with it. I don't have to worry about like breaking down, knock on wood, that kind of thing. But yeah.
Yeah.
I would probably go for new Mustang, I think. Yeah, that would be nice.
Oh, warranty.
Yeah, I've never had that luxury, 50 man. Years ago on your Mustang. Yeah, right. I could try taking it to Ford dealership. I don't think they'd work on it.
That could be a whole YouTube video. Well, Ford work on your 60s Mustang. Yeah. Yeah. YouTubers listening to this, take advantage, buy a classic Mustang, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they'll do it.
See if they'll do an oil change on it.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
It'd be super funny to have them do just something so mundane. Yeah, like, hey, can you change
new floor mats. Plugs?
My light is flickering. I don't know why.
Check codes.
Check codes.
Yeah, the check engine. Yeah, there's no check engine on. But like, can you check it? Yeah. That's funny. I never thought of doing that. But someone should do it. Someone should do it and tag us. You know, like, let us know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea.
But yeah, that was pretty fun. So before we wrap up the episode, do you want to let us know like where people could follow you on Instagram, that sort of thing, and just go along with the progress of, you know, your builds and your future projects?
Yeah, totally. Yep, I'm on Instagram at it's Danny Diaz, and my last name is spelled D-I-E-Z, E like elephant, Z like zebra. Pretty uncommon spelling, but I gotta remind people because every time I go somewhere, they like spell it D-I-A-Z or something like that.
I totally misspelled it. You can see it here. It says Danny Diaz, episode 6.
I'm used to it. It's all good. Maybe I should just change my name to make it easier.
Cool. I've never met it.
I think it's kind of cool. Yeah, right? Diaz. Yeah, I'm on there. I update pretty frequently. You know, I like sharing like little tips and tricks because like if someone's just getting into it, there's no like central place like ask someone like, oh, like how did you do like go about doing this? Like unless you go to like a show and like straight up ask them like, how do you like wire this that way? Or like what do you use to connect this to that? You know,
it's always nice. That's what I like sharing. Person. Like I DM so many people on Facebook or Instagram trying to like get info. I'm like, dude, like I saw your engine bay picture. How did you fit that radiator in there? Like I cannot fit it in.
Right. Yeah. They're like, how did you solve this one really specific issue, right?
Yeah.
Like you can go to the forums, but like no one hosts their images anymore.
Before we finish, now that you mentioned that, there was this, maybe you know the answer to this because you have an old Mustang. So when you turn sometimes when you put the blinkers on, it'll turn on the front hazard lights on, but the rear blinkers will work on the Mustang.
I don't even have hazard lights on mine. I just straight up have turn signals and that's it. The fact that it's even working is amazing.
It's funny.
You know what it might be?
Yeah,
I think it might be the actual turn signal itself, because when I first got my Mustang, I had an issue where my running lights would work and the turn signal wouldn't. And it ended up being the actual socket. Like, I replaced bulbs, I like looked at the wiring, nothing was wrong with it, but like something in the socket, I guess, like rusted out or something. Okay. And once I replaced
I sort of cleaned it, and like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. So, but I think you're right, it might be the socket, but it's annoying.
Yeah. Carburetor guys, electrical issues. What an iconic duo.
All right, Danny. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Like, you know, our plan is to have people back on for like multiple episodes. So like season two, you know, we'd love to catch up with you and see where the Gran Torino's at. Yeah.
I'm loving the episodes, man. Yeah, for sure. Hopefully it's, I won't say off the jack stands, but at least have some wheels and tires under it. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. I'll definitely try to wrap it up by then.
Thank you guys for listening to another podcast episode. We'll catch you guys on the next one.